Today is December 23rd, 2015, and this is episode number 338 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, second stand-in for the Ghost of Christmas Past. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit do we have a script?
Yeah. Yeah, you have it. So I'll give you a hint. Full story on anything covering this.
I don't have a script. You didn't send me a script. No, yeah. I don't.
You totally have the script.
I don't have a script. I've got a script from this from last week.
Really?
Yeah. Look at that.
No, you don't.
And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You totally have a script for this week.
I don't have a script for this week.
You totally have a script for this week.
Except that I don't. I'm looking at it right now. There's no script. Okay, I didn't give you topics, so, you know.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm looking at the script that I gave you, so all I have to say is, yay technology.
Yeah, Skype for the win.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Okay, and that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
We should probably talk about the things.
You know, I have a feeling our listeners are totally intrigued to hear whether or not you really did get the script.
I kind of doubt it. So let's talk about Taylor Swift instead, because everybody loves Taylor Swift.
You know, I feel kind of bad saying I'm sure I've heard Taylor Swift songs, but I don't know if I could recognize any.
Yeah, fair enough. Everyone loves Taylor Swift. Maybe except us, but we are slightly outside the target demo.
Yeah, I think we probably are. Although I do respect her work and the fact that she's been able to become so successful, and she's what, like 25?
26, I believe.
26?
Yeah, she has mostly succeeded on every successful artist has had good luck. Every single successful artist has had some amount of good luck, but she has succeeded mostly on incredible hard work and discipline.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her. I'm happy. Happy as can be before. So, the reason why we're talking about Taylor Swift,
is she single? I mean, no reason.
I don't think she is.
Oh, all right. Well, let's talk about something else.
Are you wanting to set her up with your son?
Wait, I have a kid.
Anyway, so Taylor Swift she had this huge mega smash hit album called 1989, mm-hmm. The year of her birth.
Holy
and
crap.
And she had a very huge mega successful tour to go with it, and she just released the tour movie.
Okay.
As well. And she did so as an exclusive with Apple Music.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, that sounds to me like quite a coup for Apple.
Probably. It is probably a huge coup. So what Apple did is, if you're an Apple Music subscriber, you can watch it. You know, just, it's that easy. You're not paying extra for it.
I should do that, since I can't really identify any of her songs.
Fair enough. And that includes trial subscribers, so people who are on their 90-day trial.
Or if you haven't signed up yet, now you can sign up for the free trial and see her concert.
Right, and she has lots of fans. So it is probably a coup for Apple. But my question is, how much did Apple pay for that? Because I bet Apple paid a lot of money for this.
Yeah, I bet you're right. I mean, this isn't the sort of thing where it's done like as a favor.
No, it would be – I would be shocked if it was done as a favor. First of all, Taylor Swift is a very, very savvy businesswoman. And secondly, something like this does have a lot of value. She is a very hot property. She is popular. She has devoted fans, and anyone having exclusive access. Now, I can't imagine that exclusive access will last in perpetuity.
No, of course not. But still, if she's very smart, very savvy as a business person, and clearly she seems to be, then she will probably have already been planning for a time when she isn't bringing in as much money. So she's made sure that she's set.
No doubt. By the way, the script just came through. True story.
Are you serious?
Yeah. True story. Just came through. So,
yay, Skype.
The question is, how much did Apple pay? I'm just curious. I'm sure that whatever amount Apple paid, it actually probably made financial sense for Apple to do so. It was probably a lot of money. It was probably in the millions. Don't have any direct evidence of that, and I could be mistaken. Maybe there could be something I don't understand about the economics of world tour movies. But I'm guessing it was in the millions.
I would bet you're right. And for Apple, that's probably just a very easy to justify investment, because this right now is the only place where you can see her live world tour. And isn't it Australia, her Sydney concert or something?
At least parts of it are. I watched about, I don't know, 30 minutes of it or so. And at least parts of it are in Sydney. I wasn't paying quite close enough attention to know if it's just one show or if it's actually segments from multiple shows. Considering the number of camera angles involved, it probably was just one show.
Well, I'm actually interested in watching the show now.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I'll broaden my musical horizons. But yeah, I mean, the money that Apple paid, it has to be millions of dollars. And most of which I'm assuming she is going to get because Taylor Swift is very smart.
Yes. Yes, she is. So, the other question is this, you know, is this the sort of thing that Apple needs to do to bring in viewers? Will Apple be doing more such exclusive videos, exclusive tour movies?
I bet the answer is yes. Apple will be doing more of these. It's, if nothing else, it adds an air of legitimacy to their music service, because Apple, even though what they've done is taken Beats music and then just kind of built out from there, and I know I'm oversimplifying it, Apple's still the newcomer in this game.
Yeah, very much so.
And they need to prove themselves against the likes of Pandora and Spotify.
Yes. Yes, I should think so. By the way, Forbes said that, actually, I guess this is from Billboard, said that as of mid-October, this world tour of Miss Swift had grossed $175 million.
Holy crap.
And Apple is promoting the movie. Just an interview. So Zane Lowe is doing an interview with Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it looks like, actually on the 14th. So a week ago that happened.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we're right on top of our Taylor Swift news.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I would like to see this sort of stuff. I mean, I don't need it to be, I don't need it to be exclusive to want to watch it with my Apple Music subscription. Mm-hmm. But having content like this is definitely, I think, the kind of value-added thing that Apple can use to help set Apple Music apart from its competition.
I agree. And Apple has the advantage of having a platform for delivering Apple Music content, where they can do more than just push out some songs. They can put videos and movies
online. Yeah, and I like seeing. So, like, one of the things I did enjoy about this the parts of the movie I saw is that it wasn't just the straight live stuff between songs. There were interviews with Taylor and some other behind the scenes look at things. And I always enjoy that sort of stuff with artists. I love, I obsess over context. I like getting more information about stuff.
Yeah. The behind the scenes stuff to me actually sounds more interesting than watching just a concert video, not just Taylor Swift, but like any broadcast concert. And by broadcast, in this case, I mean stream through Apple TV or Apple Music. And I'd love to see more content like that.
I always like seeing this stuff, and I love seeing stuff. Did you see the movie Real City?
No.
We talked about that, right? The movie that what's his face? I guess I'm so bad with names. What the guy, drummer from Nirvana, Foo Fighters, guitarist, singer?
Oh, right,
Dave Grohl.
Yes,
yeah, Dave Grohl did the Real City. It was essentially a documentary about a mixing board, but a very very special mixing board. But to tell the story of the mixing board, what he did is he told the story of all the artists who had recorded there. Not all the artists, but a lot of the artists who had recorded there over the decades. And it's fascinating. And then he recorded a song in a studio with that board with the artists that were being profiled in the movie.
Right.
So you get the history, the actual Fleetwood Mac's recordings of Rumors, for instance. And you talked a lot about that. Well, that's interesting stuff to me. And then he did a song with Stevie Nicks singing, and I eat that kind of stuff up. So I like seeing artists at work. I like seeing that creative process. The Beatles in the studio with the Let It Be movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love that stuff. So yeah, I want to see more of it.
Yeah, I haven't been all that interested in watching video content related to Apple Music stuff. But if there were documentaries, films like that, a lot more of those, I would probably have an issue with scheduling time in my day.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's move on to John Chen. What do you say?
I think that sounds like a great idea, and I love how you had to spend so much time just trying to sort out if he was actually saying anything.
Well, that's the funny. All right, so here's the story. John Chen wrote a little editorial that was posted on BlackBerry's site. John Chen is the CEO of BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
He's Hong Kong born. He's not a U.S. citizen. This is the point I didn't actually make in my piece. And BlackBerry is not a U.S. company. They're a Canadian company.
Right.
Nonetheless, a lot of what he was saying, if not all of what he was saying, was aimed either entirely or partially at the U.S. market. And the title of his piece was, what was the title of his piece? It was, the encryption debate : a way forward.
Okay. So now based on that, my assumption is that you're about to detail for me and our listeners, this plan he has for dealing with the very nuanced and difficult issues surrounding encryption, privacy, and protection.
Yes, it feels like it's going to be a proposal.
Yep, that's what I'm expecting.
It seems like it's going to be a proposal. And, did I just say that?
You totally just said that. You said it's going to feel like a proposal.
Yeah, you got that time mark there so you can bleep me out?
Yeah, I've got that time mark.
Sorry about that. So it seems like it's going to be some kind of darn proposal, and And, you know, I read through it. I read through it again. Read through it again. And I'm like, at that point, I pinged you. It's like, hey, man, did you read this piece yet that that Mr. Chin wrote? And you told me, not yet. You know, I'll read it. It's like, okay, I'll wait.
And I read it. And I thought, this is a trick, right?
Yeah, he doesn't say anything.
Yeah, my fear at first after reading it was that because I was a little tired at the time, that I was just being really stupid and totally missing the point. And it turns out, no, I wasn't, because there was no point for me to miss.
Yeah. At least
as far as I could tell.
So I kind of snarkily broke it down into to 6 points. I said, one, Mr. Chin is saying that encryption is good. Two, he's saying you can't have back doors because they don't work, so stop asking for them. And three, his third point was that Apple won't help law enforcement, and that's because they love themselves more than you and don't care about safety and et cetera. Point four, BlackBerry is awesome, and everybody who is important totally has one. And number five is that this other company did something that has nothing to do whatsoever with the topic at hand. And then his sixth point is, by the way, we should find a way to move forward.
So after all that, what I was expecting to get out of the piece wasn't even there.
Yeah, it's not even there because there is no way forward with the encryption. There is no compromise that can be made on the encryption front. Backdoor access leaves us all vulnerable. So that's a loss. There's no way to compromise on that issue.
Right. Yeah, this is actually a pretty binary thing. Either we have our encryption or we don't. And you might feel like you have the security of encryption, but once a backdoor is in place, that security is taken away.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So and I mean to a certain extent that John Chin was making that very point in his piece by saying that backdoors don't work. And I don't know, it's really weird.
Well, okay, so what I'm trying to figure out is what, how is he posturing himself
with this? Well, this to me came off as a very self-aggrandizing mistake. It was just a self-aggrandizing piece that didn't have anything to back it up. Like, you know, he spent some time talking about, you know, how many national governments around the world use BlackBerry products. Well, is that going to somehow make me think that BlackBerry isn't dying? Because it isn't.
Right.
And everybody knows that. Everybody reading that knows that BlackBerry is on the rocks.
Right.
So I'm not really sure what his point was. And then the thing that really, I mean, like, I probably would have just ignored this if he hadn't taken this big swipe at Apple. So should I read the quote?
Yes, please.
He said, for years, government officials have pleaded to the technology industry for help, yet have been met with disdain. In fact, one of the world's most powerful tech companies recently refused a lawful access request in an investigation of a known drug dealer because doing so would, quote, this quote was in a quote, substantially tarnish the brand, unquote, of the company. We are indeed in a dark place when companies put their reputation above the greater good. At BlackBerry, he said, we understand arguably more than any other large tech company, whatevs, that's not a quote, the importance of our privacy commitment to product success and brand value. Privacy and security form the crux of everything we do. However, our privacy commitment does not extend to criminals.
Okay, there's a lot that just happened there.
There's a lot.
And first up, the swipe, the big company he's referring to is Apple. And he sure took stuff way out of context. And I'm certain it was not a mistake.
No, it was very specifically and deliberately crafted, that's for sure. You know, it's interesting, by the way, one way you could read his entire piece is saying that we need to give the keys to our encryption to the government. But the funny thing is that he actually makes a point of saying that BlackBerry has never done so.
Right. So there, yeah, a little bit incongruent right there.
It's kind of weird. So let's look at this Apple thing. You know, I noted in my piece, if you read John Chen's piece and you don't know anything else, well, you would be quite excused for thinking that whoever this evil company is, and of course it's Apple, how dare them put their corporate profits ahead of our safety? But the problem is that that's not what Apple said. I mean, Apple's attorney did use those four words, but context is king,
right? And pulling those words out of context, it's very easy to make them sound like something other than they really are.
It's deceitful, is what it is. It's just deceitful. So here's the full sentence that from which that quote was taken from. Mm-hmm. From which that quote was taken. Quote, forcing Apple to extract data in this case, absent clear legal authority to do so, could threaten the trust between Apple and its customers and substantially tarnish the Apple brand.
Right. So what he's really saying is we're not going to just hand over stuff because someone asks. We need to have – all of this needs to go through the proper legal channels and procedures.
Right. That's the thing. Apple is saying that, we kind of need to uphold the law here. And if we don't, if you were going outside the law to ask us and we were to comply, well, that's going to be a problem for us as a business. And that is true. It's something that I wish AT&T had said when they decided to give the NSA direct access to all their backbones.
Yeah, that would have
warrantless,
been
warrantless access. Warrantless access.
Yes, there you go. Backwards. That's the key thing. Warrantless is the really important word in this case.
So, and for John Chen to position those four words that he quoted outside of their context in a way that completely divorces them from their actual meaning and usage is deceitful and despicable. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it either. And I totally approve of your use of deceitful and despicable.
Thank you.
I think it's absolutely appropriate here.
And then there was his last words, right? The last words in that this is actually, I think, the second or third paragraph in his editorial. But this last sentence in the quote that I included, however, our privacy commitment does not extend to criminals.
I was waiting to get there.
Yeah, in this case, you're talking about accused criminals, not necessarily criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important
distinction.
It's a massively important distinction. The entire, of course, you know, he is not U.S. born. He was born in Hong Kong, and he's the CEO of a Canadian company, not a U.S. company. Right? And I understand that. However, a lot of his thing was addressed at the U.S. market. So, as a U.S. person, I'm going to say that it is accused criminals to whom we must always fight to make sure the full protection of the law is extended for whom, to whom, over whom. Right? It is accused criminals in particular who need who need full due process.
Right. And so in essence what he is doing here is condoning guilty until proven innocent, as opposed to innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, because Apple's privacy commitment doesn't extend to criminals either. Apple complies with warrants that are duly served.
Right.
To the ability that it can.
Right. And, yes.
And of course, you know, that brings us back to the original argument is, you know, hold the whole disk encryption thing, the end user encryption thing. So Apple cannot comply with duly issued warrants on devices that are running iOS 8 and iOS 9. They can't. Right. They can't get to them because no one can. Because that's the entire point. It's the only way to keep our data out of the hands of the bad guys.
Right. Yeah. If Apple can unencrypt those communications, then that means there's a backdoor. And like we have said so many times, a backdoor isn't just for one person. It's there for everyone.
It's there for everybody to find. Yes. And don't believe that because we say it, because we're just repeating our betters here. Right, we're repeating the encryption nerds and the math wonks and the people who have been studying this for decades.
Right,
they're the ones who say
serious privacy and encryption advocates.
Yeah, the people who actually know.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. So the stuff that really had me annoyed about this piece was calling Apple out of context and then presenting a case where this vague statement, which is very dangerous, is used about criminals and then actually not giving anything in the piece that's really constructive.
Yeah. I wish that he had had some kind of, you know, proposal that we could be talking about. You just missed such a big opportunity here. And you know, it's funny reading through some of the comments. So this was posted to the BlackBerry site, to the BlackBerry blog, mm-hmm. the BlackBerry owned blog, and they do allow comments. And some of the comments from the people there, obviously, there's a lot of BlackBerry fans and supporters and, you know, kind of like Apple fans back in the 90s,
uh-huh.
beleaguered company and all. And, you know, some of them like were shaking their head too. And there's one guy said, you know, BlackBerry is in the process of rolling out some new corporate initiative, some new service or something. And he said that This was a stupid time for John Chin to say these things, because it just takes attention away from this thing that BlackBerry is doing that's theoretically important to the company. And I completely agree with that. I mean, there was no need for John Chin to go off on this angle. And we were by far not the only people to rip into him for this stuff.
Yeah, which is good, because otherwise, it might look like we were just being hypercritical.
Right.
Yeah. But, I feel like his essay, his whatever you want to call it, did absolutely nothing to help move forward the whole discussion about security, privacy, and encryption.
Yeah. Yeah, in a nutshell.
Yeah, it almost felt like, to me, a piece that he wrote, not because he had something that he felt compelled to share, but because he felt like, I don't know, what's a better way to say it? He was doing a Me Too thing. Everyone else is talking about the security thing, so Me Too.
Yeah. And Apple, in the meanwhile, continues to argue publicly and forcefully that backdoors don't work. And right. Yeah, so, you know.
Yeah, does it feel to you like he's saying in the piece that backdoors can work?
Well, yeah, it does. Except for the thing, though, is that he spends so much time saying, you know, defending his company's record. So, like, on the one hand, it felt like he was saying, hey, look, we've never allowed anyone access to, you know, we don't have backdoors and don't give government backdoors and stuff, and we don't do that. And then in the next breath, but really, maybe, you know, maybe it's a good idea. Maybe, yeah, that's what we have to do to stay safe.
And that was really weird and actually kind of concerning to get that vibe out of the piece.
Yeah. Yeah, the vibe didn't necessarily match the words. And so, you know, it's always possible that we're reading more into it than he intended.
Sure. Yeah, that's totally possible.
I mean, he does state categorically. He also criticized politicians who he was much more polite about it than this, but he was critical of politicians who haven't bothered to get educated on this subject because they're saying things that are technically untrue. And that stuff was all very, very crystal clear from Mr. Chip. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's but when it came to like what his company is doing or would do or might do or could do, there was just nothing.
All right. So now that we've been hashing through this, I'm starting to wonder because I'm at the point where it's actually pretty easy to pull out the tinfoil hat and go all Dave Hamilton and support conspiracy theories, or at least, you know, in spirit support them. Is it possible that this is his gentle way of setting up what he's really telling people, which is that BlackBerry is assisting governments in decrypting data that goes through their networks?
It's possible. We don't have any evidence of that, though.
No, but that's not going to stop me from speculating.
I mean, it certainly could be. He is categorically saying that we need to do something. And as I said when we started talking about the subject, the problem is that there is no compromise here. Either we cripple encryption so that the bad guys can have, you know, free runs, unlimited free runs at our data, or we don't.
Right. And then with his kind of a broad use of the term criminals, does that mean that if you and I decide, assuming that all these backdoors end up getting put in place, hopefully they won't, but if we decide to use tools outside the mainstream so we can continue to have private conversations, even though we have nothing to hide, does that make us a criminal in Mr. Chen's eyes?
Well, you know, that's – the slippery slope is an important aspect of this entire discussion. You know, clearly few people want to in any way protect an accused kidnapper.
Right.
Right. We want the text messages on the accused kidnapper's phone so that the kidnapping victim can be found, right? I mean, that's – of course we do. We just, at the same time, understand that you can't do it where it's just the kidnapper.
Right. Right?
That is the issue. My point just vanished, Jeff.
Well, that's too bad because I bet it was
huge. What was your question?
My question was, what happens when hypothetically these laws go into place and companies have to put back doors in, and then some bad guy uses those back doors, figures out where they are, how to access them, and then decrypts someone's conversations so they can figure out how to kidnap them?
Yeah, sure. Or, you know, which is much more likely, how to steal their money, how to steal their identity, you know. Right.
How to blackmail them.
Yeah, that's the, you know, how to get photographs off their phone so that they can publish them, you know.
Right.
I know what it was. It was the slippery slope thing. This I can't believe I let this thread evaporate in my mind. You can come up with bugaboos and you know, scary monsters in the dark all you want. But extreme and ridiculous examples aside, the issue here is not what is going on when the government is going after terrorists, would-be terrorists, plotting terrorists, potential terrorists, criminals and all of their various subgenres too, right? That's not the issue. The issue here is what happens in the future when any government has these powers and then the wrong person comes into political power or appointed power and decides to use them in other ways.
And there's precedent for things like that happening because
always happens.
Yeah, we have thousands of years of human history where the best of intentions are manipulated into something that people weren't anticipating.
Give it time. There should be maybe there is in philosophical circles a name for this, but something like Gottfried's Law. Yeah, given enough time, all best intentions will be subverted.
You know, there has to be a term for that. And my guess is that with as sharp as our listeners are, someone knows, and they're going to
tell us. Yeah, let us know. Oh, yeah. Do let us know.
Yeah, because clearly we're incapable of typing on a keyboard and doing a Google search.
I mean, you know, just like the one of the biggest examples. Mm-hmm. Ignoring all the recent stuff and involving excesses by the NSA and all the warrantless mass surveillance that has been perpetrated against the American people. Ignoring that, going back to the FBI under Hoover with Nixon. I mean, Hoover himself abused the FBI.
Oh, horribly.
And then Nixon, with Hoover's help, abused it for political reasons. You know, Hoover abused the FBI for, you know, a lot of personal stuff. And then Nixon abused the FBI for political gain. I mean, mm-hmm. This is a relatively recent example of how that happens. But it's look at any government that lasts long enough, and corruption it seems inevitable.
Yeah, I think so. Which is so unfortunate. Oh, don't forget about McCarthy.
That was a good time.
So there we go. That's two fairly recent examples.
Well, yeah, McCarthy really didn't. McCarthy was almost a symptom. That's a rabbit hole for another time. Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
Okay. And there's like three listeners right now that are like, oh, I really wanted to hear that.
Speaking of hearing, I heard that we have a new Twitter account.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Is this where I make a joke about, did a little birdie tell you? Hopefully not, because I don't think it'll be a good joke.
No.
Well, hey, your hobo friends are there. So I guess you have to wrap up.
Nope. We have time for one more topic.
Oh, great.
Trains have been loud the last few days.
Yeah, and just so everyone's clear, I wasn't trying to get Brian out of our show. It's just the train timing was so perfect that I could not pass that up.
Exactly. You got to take your opportunities, man.
So anyhow, this Twitter thing.
Yeah, Twitter thing. ACM, Context Machine. Context Machine. We tried to get ACM, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We tried to get everything related to the show name, and the one that was actually available turned out to be Context Machine, which, as it turns out, I really like.
Yeah, Apple Context Machine was too long.
Yes.
And we didn't – I mean, Twitter wouldn't allow Apple Context Machine. And I'm not a big fan of doing something like – AAPLCONTMCHN. I'm not a fan of that sort of thing. Neither are the trains.
Clearly, and I'm so confused now. I'm not sure if you're trying to rattle off a name or a mathematical equation.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Context Machine. at Context Machine on the Twitter. You can follow us, and you can talk to us that way. If you want to get a message to both me and Jeff, especially, you know, any kind of dialogue going on with other listeners too.
Right. It's sort of like your own public chat room.
Yeah. Exactly. So we would definitely appreciate a follow, and we would, but much more we would appreciate hearing from you.
Yes. Yeah. What you guys have to say is always important to us.
Indeed.
We listen.
Yeah. Because, I mean, without listeners, a podcast is an exercise in mental self-pleasure.
Oh, you have no idea how difficult it is right now, Brian.
Yes, I do. I chose my words carefully for you know, multiple effects.
Yes, and the only reason that I'm able to maintain my self-control in this moment is because I know what's involved in editing our shows.
Exactly, because you're doing it these days. Haha, LOL.
Yeah.
So in the meanwhile, over at Apple, we have a new member of the C-suite.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a shifting around of responsibilities, and one of the shifts was Jeff Williams getting a new title. He's now the COO.
Right. He is now the COO, a title that Tim Cook once held.
Yes, that's true.
And so it stands for Chief Operating Officer or Chief Operations Officer. I forget which version Apple uses. And you know, this is basically this is logistics. This is manufacturing. This is operations.
Right. So this is pretty much what I'm thinking Jeff Williams was already doing as a vice president, senior vice president. And now they've just given him the official title to go along with it.
Yeah, and the money.
Sure. Yeah. Like he's probably getting another, 75 cents an hour or something?
Yeah, something like that. Same thing with Tim Cook. Tim Cook was doing the same job as vice president of operations and senior vice. I think he was also had a step as senior vice president, but maybe not. And then, you know, he's eventually promoted to COO. And that's what Jeff Williams is doing. But here's the interesting aspect of this to me.
Do tell.
Well, let's actually back up because Jeff Williams has been Tim's lieutenant in operations for many years. He's not just like some newbie or some guy who's just recently risen with an Apple. He's been working with Tim on operations for a long time. And it also turns out he was the guy in charge of the Apple Watch.
That's right.
And I found that interesting at the time. I didn't really say anything about it. I found it interesting at the time, but there was another recent development at Apple that kind of got me thinking.
And would this have anything to do with Phil Schiller?
Yeah. Yeah, Phil Schiller is in charge of the Mac App Store now.
Right. Also the iOS App Store.
Oh, that's right. It's both of them, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, he has the app stores under his umbrella now.
And those were formerly under Eddie Q's control.
Right.
And I think that we didn't talk about this at the time, but I don't think this is like taking something away from Eddie Q. I think that Eddie Q just has his plate full with books and music and movies.
Yeah, that's my guess. Yeah, this didn't come across to me like a punishment for Eddie.
No. Yeah, not at all. Not at all. If anything, it seemed like an opportunity for Phil Schiller. But here's the thing. Jeff Williams is an operations guy.
Yes.
Phil Schiller is a marketing guy.
Right.
And here we have two examples where non-product people, and I'm going back to Steve Jobs talking about product guys, said that companies like Apple need to have product guys in charge.
But these aren't product guys.
Well, and they're not in charge, but they're in charge of products. And there's two ways to look at that. Two ways to look at that. One is that Apple is – that Tim Cook is going against – that he's lost track maybe, lost sight of one of Steve Jobs' main tenets, which is you have product people in charge of products. When you start putting bean counters or marketing guys or sales guys in charge of products or in charge of a company in particular, is actually was what Steve Jobs was really talking about, the companies lose focus on being able to create new and interesting products because different things become the priority. New products don't become the priority. Making money, increasing sales, maximizing your profits, those sorts of things start becoming the focus of a company.
Which is the argument that a lot of people had about Steve Ballmer running Microsoft.
Right. Microsoft made a lot of money under Steve Ballmer. But yes. At the same time, Microsoft lost its ability to innovate. Rephrase. At the same time, Microsoft lost what little powers of innovation that it had.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that that we took care of that edit, rewound everything, and no one heard the way you said it the first time.
Exactly. And HP, another example. HP was founded by product men. Mm-hmm. Product people. This isn't mm-hmm. this isn't a gender specific thing, and was eventually had a bean counter put in charge of the company, and there are lots of examples of that, and it's because part of what happens is that as a company ages and matures and starts making money, people who are good at making money become more important within that company. And then it's kind of like going back to the IT days back in the 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You didn't need to have IT people taking care of the Macs. You needed IT people to take care of the Windows machines. And so the more Windows machines, support staff that an IT department had, the more they wanted Windows. It's kind of, well, natural and obvious.
Of course. I mean, if nothing else, it's job security.
Yeah, and if – right, exactly. It's, at the very least. But it's also – it's the thing that's important to them. They wanted Windows. They knew Windows.
Right.
They didn't want all these Macs in the way. And so, it's kind of a paradox that one reason why Apple had so many problems in the corporate space was because they didn't need as much support.
Yeah, that's true. They were seen as a threat.
Right. And so when you put a sales guy in charge of a company, well, he's probably going to focus on sales.
Right. And that's exactly what happened with Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. And it's one reason why I initially rejected the idea that Tim Cook would be put in charge of Apple. Because Steve always talked about the importance of product guys, having product people in charge of product companies. And as when the discussions about this Steve's successor or Apple having a succession plan came up, all signs pointed to Tim Cook, but it didn't make any sense to me because Tim Cook's not a product guy. He's an operations guy.
Right, but we were missing some of the pieces that made all of this make sense at the time, and as it turns out, I think he, even though he's an operations guy, not a product guy, I think he's doing pretty well.
Well, he is. I think it, some people would certainly argue that some products have not had the fit and finish that we might want, but you know what? There's going to be some kind of change at Apple with any kind of leadership change,
right? And don't forget, there were plenty of products that came out under Steve Jobs' watch, where people complained about fit and finish, and
especially on the software side,
right? And has Apple lost their ability to innovate? And so those comments and viewpoints are not new to Tim Cook.
No, they're certainly not new to Tim Cook. But now we have this new situation entirely, where we have existing executives who are not known for being product-centric, product-oriented, who aren't known for developing products, who aren't known for the creative side of the business. Mm-hmm. Now we've got a situation where two such people are in charge of products. And I find it really interesting. Now, earlier I said there were two ways to look at it. We just kind of deeply explored one of those ways. But the other way is that Jeff Williams is a product guy and that Phil Schiller is a product guy. And just because they've been doing these other jobs doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't product people in the way that Steve Jobs talked about product people. And my guess is I don't know a whole lot about Jeff Williams. I think it's quite possible that applies to Phil Schiller. You know, Phil Schiller worked side by side.
You just said Phil Schiller. That was awesome.
Did I really?
You totally said Phil Schiller.
And why? Can you take that one out too then?
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
That one's totally out.
Phil Schiller. It's very possible that Phil Schiller is actually much more of a product guy than we've ever given him credit for. It's very possible. That's entirely possible.
Yeah, we've only seen him in the context that Steve presented to us, which is carried over to Tim running the company.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And Phil Schiller was, you know, Tim Cook might have been, well, Katie Cotton was Steve's right-hand person. Mm-hmm. But Tim Cook was his other right-hand person, and then Phil Schiller was and Johnny Ives was his soul partner, soulmate, and then Phil Schiller was his other right-hand person.
So basically, what you've just told me is that Steve Jobs was a benevolent Dr. Octopus,
or Shiva.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just interesting to me. I'm not necessarily trying to raise alarm bells here, but it's really interesting to me that a non-product person was in charge of a new product like the Apple Watch.
Yeah. And the whole thing about sending up alarms, I didn't get that from our conversation. To me, if there was cause for alarms, we would have already been discussing this, and this is more like you said. It's just very interesting that you know, at one point Apple was operating under the Steve Jobs philosophy of you don't put operations guys in charge of products.
You never said operations guys. His main focus was
or marketing guys. Excuse me,
marketing guys and bean counters.
Yeah, that yes. Yeah, I totally
money guys, the accountants.
Yeah, you don't put the money guys in charge of the products, and now we have these marketing and operations people that are in charge of specific products, and everything's working just fine. Well, hopefully,
you say that
be working just fine. I think I realized what I said, and the App Store is a hot mess right now.
Yeah, the App Store is a hot mess. And, you know, part of that, that's, I guess that would be the, you know, the third side of this issue is this is in part because Apple runs so lean. And the number of executives that Apple has for the size of its company is tiny compared to most other companies. And so, you know, this is kind of what we have. And then Eddie Q, you know, his job has been Hollywood and the entertainment world, and of course books, so it'd be New York. But his job has been those places And those places are becoming ever more important to Apple. Not I'm not saying that the App Store is not important. What I'm saying, though, is that it's actually it's probably insane that Eddie Q has had all of these projects on his plate.
I agree. And I mean, with everything that he has to do, my feeling is that dealing with the app stores was detracting from what he excels at and from the responsibilities that he really needed to be focusing on, which is content.
Right. And of course, you know, the app stores are content too, but I guess you could sort of turn what I'm saying on its ear and say that, well, does this mean that marketing is not going to be getting the attention that it needs from Mr. Schiller? And that's especially salient in that while Phil was Apple's product marketing guy, Steve Jobs was so deeply involved with marketing too. So, you know, I mean, in many ways, Phil Schiller might possibly have had the deepest impact on his job with Steve's passing. So that's entirely possible because Steve Jobs was so involved with marketing.
True. Yeah. So, you know, wouldn't it be fascinating to be able to just kind of watch what's really happening at Apple on a day-to-day basis, so we'd have a much better understanding about how these different responsibilities really are being handled?
Yep. It would be a fly on the wall. Fly on the wall would be good.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So Twitter, that's at Context Machine. Give us a follow.
Yeah.
Give us a shout out.
Yeah, we love hearing from you. That would be totally awesome. Do you have your own Twitter account, Brian?
I do. I'm at TM O'Brien. It's Brian with a Y.
Oh, cool, cool. I'm Jay Gamut. That's Jay Gamut.
With a gamut.
With a gamut, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. All right. Oh, my gosh, I think we have a show.
Yep.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you know where to write us. That would be acm@macobserver.com, also at Context Machine.
By the way, happy Christmas or other winter solstice holiday, as the case may be.
Yes, happy event to you too, Brian.
See, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Jump the gun.
Totally. Well, it was all that mental talk.